Roots Race and Culture is made possible in part by the contributions to PBS Utah from listeners like you. Thank you.
Hey, my friends, you're listening to Roots, Race, and Culture, the podcast from PBS Utah.
If you like what you hear, we hope you'll subscribe, leave us a review, and share with your friends.
All right, now let's get this thing started.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Roots, Race, and Culture. Well, you know the routine. We're here to bring you into some candid conversations about shared cultural experiences. I'm Daynor Gerald.
And I'm Lonzo Liggins. In the summer of 2020, protests erupted around the world following the death of George Floyd. Diversity, equity, and inclusion would soon take center stage in universities, corporations, schools, city, state, and federal-run programs. Change was in the air. But just as soon as change began to take shape, a swift and harsh backlash started to happen in the years to follow. Earlier in this year in Utah, four bills were introduced in this legislative session that targeted diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI. And similar challenges are happening in other states. Many who have been on the front lines of DEI in our state were perplexed. How could something that seemed to be such a vital force for the betterment of the state and the nation, for that matter, be harmful in any way? And how did we go from acceptance of DEI to skepticism? Is there a way to preserve and improve upon the progress we were making in 2020? Well, let's find out. Joining us today, we have Nikki Walker and Dr. Sydney Shorter. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Well, Nikki, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us about it?
Sure. So I'm Nikki Walker. I serve as the Director of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion for a Utah-based software company. And in my free time, I spend time serving the public by doing DEI workshops and talking with people about what inclusivity looks like. Mm. I'm also a member of the Board of Directors for the Utah Black Chamber of Commerce. Among other boards that I sit on. There are about four of them.
Yeah, where are you originally from?
I'm originally from Jersey City, New Jersey.
Ooh.
And moved six years ago to Lehigh, Utah. So talk about culture.
Jersey City
a bit of a
to
shift.
Lehigh. Wow, that's a...
You seem to be handling this shock well.
Well, 6 years in, and I'm still here, and I'm not going anywhere. I don't think Utah can get rid of me.
Good.
So I'm here with a purpose for good.
Good, good. We're glad to have you. Dr. Shorter, introduce yourself, please.
Well, again, thank you for having me. I am the president and CEO of the Utah Black Chamber of Commerce. Mm-hmm. I hailed from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and love it here in Utah. But the focus of my work here is really all about business and ensuring that all businesses have the opportunity to be a vital part of the economic ecosystem.
Mm. Oh, I love it.
Ooh, I love that intro.
Yeah. Well, I hear you're doing some really great things, and we're just really glad to have you in the state.
Thank you.
We'd love to hear about your organizations. So why don't we start with you, Nikki?
Sure. So the organization that I'm a part of right now that is most important to me is the Black Chamber of Commerce. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I get to have a mentor like Dr. Sydney Shorter, who, of course, is the CEO and has really transformed what that organization is about. When I came here 6 years ago, the Black Chamber was still a hub for the Black community here. Mm-hmm. But it has changed its tone and it has changed its purpose. And I have the pleasure of being the PR chair of the on the board. And so I get the opportunity to help shape the language around what is happening with the chamber and why it's important for people to be members and to really engage with us, with our members, with our business owners, and with Black people in general in Utah. One of my passions is most certainly ensuring that people are living inclusive lifestyles. And in order to do so, organizations like the Black Chamber of Commerce are incredibly important and vital.
Awesome. Well, I'm curious now. Clearly, you're taking things in a positive direction, as she said. But from your point of view, give us an understanding of what diversity, equity, inclusion is. Give us your definition of DEI.
Well, I call it WE.
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 Okay.
Because we are here, we are in it. We have to make decisions around it, but that's how we exist. We are not singular, we are not solo. And the best way to ensure that a system works is that all parts of it can do its part,
right?
Because we all bring something different to it. It's just like a car. The wheels don't do what the engine does, and the windows don't do what the doors do, but they are all equally important. And so it is ensuring that all parts of that system can function so that we all can move forward just like that vehicle.
Sounds good to me. It seems like a positive thing. So since it's been under scrutiny lately, how can something so positive be getting a lot of perceived backlash or you know, people are just questioning whether it's really valuable?
Yeah, it's unfortunate because for a number of reasons, one of the things is that people begin to feel like they are under attack when other people are pushed forward. And in DEI, diversity, we look at it and say it's a fact. It is a fact that diversity needs to exist. We look at stats and 35% increases in business at the end of the day when management teams are diverse. So we're looking at research from the Harvard Business Review. We're looking at research from prestigious colleges and institutions that are telling us that the bottom line is affected when there are diverse voices at the table. And I'll tell you why that is. I always use this reference. If there are five white, straight, cisgender men at the table making a widget, we are missing a lot of perspective on what that widget could be. We're not taking into consideration how the end user is feeling about using that widget. But when we bring somebody who is differently abled to the table, when we bring a woman to the table, or we bring an immigrant to the table, we are viewing it from another perspective, and we're finding where the holes may be. So when you're all one, when we're homogenous, we are talking in an echo chamber. We're hearing ourselves say, this is great, this is great, this is great, and you don't hear any opposing opinions, or not necessarily opposing, but opinions that are going to make the thing better because it's going to grant access to other people. And DEI is about accessibility. In order for us to be positively motivated, to be upwardly mobile, we need to have diversity, and in that those diverse individuals should be equitably treated. And equity is not the same thing as equality. I want to make that distinction. So equality says that everybody gets the same thing, but equity says everybody gets the thing that they need in order to succeed. So there's a huge difference.
That's
there.
That's a really big difference when you explain it that way, and I don't think people understand that.
Don't think people understand that, and that's where the pushback comes from.
And I have a question for you. Are there other ways that DEI is important outside of business? Because I know we had spoken about the culture of a company. Can you speak to that?
Yeah. So what's really important, we look at the investments that are made by many companies who want to ensure that they have diversity, right? And so, but what happens when that diverse candidate arrives, right? So it's really taking a serious look at the culture of your organization, because every organization does have a culture. And all cultures are not conducive to diversity. And so as much as you may want it, there is work that's involved. And that is that's the aspect around the skepticism now, because it's not an add water and mix. I'll go back to our roots of Louisiana. When we talk about gumbo, right? America was built on the premise of a melting pot. That meant that everyone had to conform, assimilate, and become like the majority. Gumbo has different ingredients, and all the ingredients, although they are in the same pot, preserve their unique flavor. And that's what makes it great.
Oh, yeah. You get three or four layers of flavor when you get some
and
gumbo.
And the melting pot is very different, right? Because it has all melded into one. But when we all work and simmer together, right, and preserve our own unique flavors, that's what makes it wonderful. That's what makes it beautiful. That's
what
makes
it work. I like that analogy. That's beautiful.
What is performative and PR? You mentioned that before.
Yes, I have.
Wait, a lot of people, is this from like a lot of DEI officers at really big organizations have resigned and that sort of thing. Is that referencing that at all?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. I call it the billboard, right? Hey, we have someone, we have many, maybe, right? But then when you look at the organization and the culture, what is happening? What is the impact? What is different because diversity is there? We know diversity is a fact. We are diverse on this set. Right. All we had to do was show up.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But now what?
Yeah.
Right? We don't get to belonging if there's not a decision made about equity. We don't get to belong unless there's action around truly being included.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's an interesting choice of words. I spoke to someone who I know who works at Walmart, right? Like one of the biggest employers in the world, okay? And their DEI officer or that position has basically been dissolved, and now they're calling it like the belonging officer or whatever that term is they're using, but belonging is the key. And part of me thought, okay, does that mean it's more inclusive now? Or in marketing, there's this thing called like loss aversion, right?
Okay.
Like people are more apt to behave on something because afraid of losing something that they have versus getting something of value or something that's new. And I feel like some people felt like they were losing something. They were losing their sense of belonging because other people were being included.
Well, that is a fact. And I mean, I can speak to that from anecdotal. I can speak to it from real life lived experiences where in companies where I have been and doing this kind of work, there has been pushback from straight white males who say, oh, well, now I'm in the minority. Now what am I supposed to do? And you know, it's a really great teaching moment when someone says something like that. Because the moment becomes, now you know how it feels. Mm. It doesn't feel good, does it? Mm. But that is not the point of diversity or equity or inclusion.
Absolutely.
The point is for everybody to feel safe. Like they belong. There needs to be a safe space. There needs to be a space where all of your person, your whole authentic self, is being accepted. And not just being accepted, but being heard
and
valued. Because when you have, you know, diverse voices at the table, that looks great, but are the same five people who look the same are the only ones speaking. If that's happening, then we don't have inclusion.
Yeah. Can I share with you guys an article? I wanted to share with you an article that was in the Washington Post. It reads, ex-Morgan Stanley executive alleges reverse discrimination in a lawsuit. He said he was unfairly terminated in the interest of Morgan Stanley's diversity goals. The idea of, and there's in quotes, reverse discrimination gets thrown around a lot by people who are fighting against DEI initiatives.
Yeah, my response to that is that this idea of reverse discrimination is not new, first of all.
Okay.
We've heard this over and over again in different ways, whether through universities or corporations. But the fact of the matter is in order to discriminate, you have to have a level of power. Mm-hmm. Power comes from institutions and power comes from systems. And if I am not a part of the system, I don't have any power over you. So there's a disconnect there. Yeah. This idea of reverse discrimination doesn't make sense because you are the person with the power. Right. The system provides you with the power. And it becomes a how come not me, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of looking at it as a whole. When we are instituting diversity, equity, and inclusion policies, it is because something has happened that has forced certain people to be starting from a different space. Yeah. And we need to get everybody on a level playing field. So when we're talking about whether it's the white person or the black person that gets hired, that's not the focus. The focus is who is qualified to be in that position. Now, what we need to understand is in order to have diversity, you have to have qualified people in the beginning of that search.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people think, oh, we're just hiring black people for diversity. No,
yes, I was about
we're
to say that.
Padding the pipeline. We're creating a pipeline that actually has diverse people in the pipeline mm-hmm. so that when these opportunities arise, diverse people are part of that opportunity mm-hmm. and they get to stand on their own legs like everybody else.
Yeah.
There is no So there is no favoritism in it. It is supplying an opportunity because talent is distributed equally, opportunity not so much.
So part of what Nikki mentioned, even in kind of breaking down how we get there, I think how we get there also informs the skepticism, because most often it's reactive. Mm-hmm. As opposed to being planned, prepared for, and responsive. And so that makes a difference as well. I had an experience here in Utah to go speak with a large organization about their thoughts around DEI and their considerations. I couldn't get in the building.
You had an appointment, though.
I had an appointment, and when I got there to security, security was certain that I was in the wrong space, that I was in the wrong place. And I was excited about having this conversation and their considerations, but it became a teachable moment about culture. So we had the meeting. They had wonderful ideas. They're looking at really making the investment and those considerations. And then I told them about my experience getting into the building.
Wow, what did they say to that?
And so, that conversation, it's uncomfortable, and uncomfortable conversations are great. However, what I shared with them was, don't reprimand, don't punish, and don't go right into making a reactive policy. Let's do some of the things that we talked about. Because what would really be a shame is if the only Black person he sees again is when I come back 2 months from now.
Oh, wow.
That we have businesses within our chamber that I can recommend, refer. There are certain things that you all said from a capacity standpoint. Consider them. Let's make sure they're in your pipeline.
Right.
There's such a fear, I think, from people when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion now. And I think the fear from the other side seems to be, as you were saying, something's getting taken away from me. This person's getting put in this position because just specifically their color, just specifically their race, or whatever it is. There seems to be this idea that there is definitely not merit that's going towards you being selected for that position. Do you think that that's mainly a lot of the pushback, or do you think there's other aspects of this pushback?
Can I jump in here?
Go for it.
Part of it is, and I say this often, we have talked about DEI to nauseam. People are tired of hearing about it. There are organizations who have made the investment, but defining it and defining it and defining it without implementation and real results can get a bit exhausted. And so I think that's what we are realizing, and that's what we're experiencing now. And so there is the PR and the performative, but then there are opportunities to really do the work. And the work isn't easy, but it's not complicated. It's not complicated.
And it's important. So I grew up here in Utah. I grew up in Sugar House. And, you know, when we moved here in 1986, it was like I would be the only Black guy everywhere. You know, I mean, I remember there was a gospel choir that came through here to sing with the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. And I was driving with my dad, and one of the people from the choir was walking by, and he's, "Black people, stop, stop." He ran up to us and just said, "Hey, where can I find hair care products?" So it was very limited at that time. And throughout that, I've seen, you know, worked at a lot of companies and had a lot of discomfort. And a lot of that culture that you're talking about, that you speak of, is very, very critical to someone like me, because I remember back just in 2007, I was working at the power company, and there was a guy there who was walking around, and he was talking about, well, it's called doorbell ditching now, but there used to be, an offensive term, the N-word knocking, you know. Right there at the workplace, he kept talking about it and talking about it. Well, at that time, people were saying, don't be so sensitive. We complained about it. We said, this guy keeps saying this over and over again. Can you guys do something about it? It was just me and another Black dude that worked there. And the rest was like maybe 30 white dudes that worked there. And they said, you're being too sensitive. You know, and I was like, this is making me uncomfortable. They said, hey, that's, you know, you just got to get over it. Stop being so sensitive. Well, this went on, and it created this environment of hostility to where I eventually just left out of that department. And I think it's so important for there to be diversity and equity in companies, because if you don't do that, then there's the opposite, where people feel very comfortable making people feel uncomfortable.
Right.
Well, I don't know if this is I'm going to try to make this short. This is the story. This lady took two young white men, two young black men, gave one of each in each category a false felony record, sent them out to do some job interviews, and based upon how many of them got called back or were able to, you know, have a chance to continue forward and get the job, they said being black is like the same thing as having a felony conviction, even if you aren't a felon. They said the white guy who was a felon had a better chance of getting a job than the black guy who was had no criminal record. Yeah. And these were all false. So there are some actual reasons why we're really trying to change the culture. And that's just not a business. That's business. That's our country. That's, like you said, that's everything, who we are. So
now, can I say?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That example is why in corporate America, people who are doing the work of DEI are doing things like removing names from resumes. Mm-hmm. We are doing things like...
So you're just looking at the merits.
It's called a blind resume.
Blind resume review. So that we don't know if you are a man, we don't know if you are a woman, black, white, veteran.
That's amazing. I think that's great.
And this is a small step in the right direction. Yeah. But some people in corporate America got it right. They are changing the language even on their job applications because we know that women won't apply for a job unless they're 100% qualified, where men are somewhere around 30% qualification. They're like I can be the CEO.
I can be the CEO.
And so what is happening is things like requirements for master's degrees are not being stated because we know that if you got your master's degree 20 years ago, you've got a master's in life at this point. Mm. And what you learned then may not be as relevant as it is now, but we want to make sure that we're receiving you for your whole being and who you are.
We'll get back to this conversation on roots, race, and culture in just a moment.
PBS Utah is also home to other dynamic podcasts. More Than Half covers some of the most challenging issues facing women in Utah and how it takes all of us to make change happen. Here's a clip from the episode, A Separate Space.
I don't think a lot of people realize that it's just not common for people of color, especially women of color, to see themselves in the stories that, you know, we're reading.
Subscribe to More Than Half wherever you get your podcasts.
And now back to Roots, Race, and Culture from PBS Utah.
All right, we are back, guys, and we are going to be asking a few more questions because we want to keep this conversation going, and we were on an interesting path, so let's tread more and see what we've got going on.
Yes, we've got Nikki Walker and Dr. Sydney Shorter here. We're going to be talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion a little deeper than we did in the broadcast show, so let's get into it.
And I want to ask you both a question. Now, this is about an article. So this was an article that was written in the Deseret News by Sydney Gonzalez. It was March of 2020. In the article, she says, she quotes Representative Sandra Hollins, Utah's only black state lawmaker. Sandra says, "My phone has been blowing up with messages from concerned students, teachers, and professors who don't feel safe in Utah school systems, as well as organizations that are trying to recruit diverse businesses and talent into the state. It seems like we are taking two steps forward and five steps back." So I want to hear your thoughts on this quote. I want to start with you, Dr. Shorter.
Well, I'll start with, I think it's unfortunate. Mm-hmm. And it is real. That is the reality. But as we mentioned earlier, I still believe that a lot of it is couched in fear, which I've never understood. But it's our reality. There are a lot of things I believe, even over time, when you look at the span of history in the U.S., when we are talking about diversity, diversity doesn't just mean race. But what's unfortunate is many times the issues around it, that's how they are experienced and lived out. And so I think if we're really honest about who it impacts, which is everyone, When we talk about the school system and issues around particular students, particular races, it still impacts everyone. And I think if we begin to really look at it in that way, it's not isolated. It is costing that system something. Yeah. There are educators and administrators who have to spend time on those issues, regardless of who they are. But unfortunately, most often, it's people of color. But it still costs the same thing.
Right.
So I'm curious about, like, this idea that people have that somehow DEI is, like, just a passing phase. Right? Like, let's move on, you know? You mentioned earlier this idea of virtue fatigue, you know? Like, how do we get to a point where it's the culture is, it's kind of like going down south, all right? When you go down south, if you're, like, rude to people, if you don't speak, say hi, wave when you, it's kind of like, who raised you? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The culture is all about sort of Southern hospitality, right? And how do you make a shift like that when people are just not used to it? In a business or in a school system.
Or in a state.
Or in a state, right?
Or in a state.
So it's really step by step. How do you eat an elephant one bite at a time, right? It's step by step. And what I want people to realize is this idea of DE&I, not idea, this industry of DE&I, this activation of DE&I is incredibly important. And we have only been, and I'm speaking from a Black perspective at this point, if you look at the span of history of Black people in the United States, the time frame that we have actually been free is very short in comparison to how long we've been here. And so I always wanna position that, because people think that DEI should become the culture immediately. Mm. Well, the fact of the matter is it's been more than 400 years since we've been here and just less than 100 years since we've been free.
Been working together to try to make it easy.
Exactly, so you can't expect that overnight, because 2020 happened, that DEI is going to be accepted or respected. There is this idea of there's not going to be anything left for the majority if everybody else gets something. But here's the reality. There's a very large pie here, and there's enough for everybody to get a piece. And you need everybody to be a part of that mix. What we don't want to see is homogenous spaces anymore. Homogenous spaces, they just repeat the same output over and over, because again, there's no one there to provide a separate perspective. So yeah, I think it's a bit at a time, and we can look toward larger companies who are creating ERGs, employee resource groups for veterans, for women who are coming back to work, for Black employees, for Hispanic employees, and so on and so forth. We can look toward them to see how to activate on DEI to change a culture. And that can be replicated in spaces.
So I remember, I don't know, maybe 6 years back now, there was an incident in a school in Utah where some people came to a big pep rally type of thing, and they were wearing, like, Klan hoods, and they were basically, you know, giving this Black student a really hard time. And I remember looking at this article and being just flabbergasted that people didn't understand that he couldn't take a joke or whatever, or right. that they didn't know, or it's one of the excuses that the students didn't know, you know, what they were doing. They were sort of saying they were just kind of ignorant of the situation. I'm like, a pointy white hood with holes in your eye. That's pretty clear. Like, everybody knows what that represents. So in school systems, DEI has a completely different challenge, I suppose. What would you say is the biggest important thing that we need to understand to help schools be equitable and inclusive for all students?
Well, I'll start with, that's a disturbing story. Hadn't heard that story,
yeah,
but I am,
yeah,
I am, so
oh,
I am from the South,
the
so it's not a new story. But here's what I often say here in Utah that I think is critical to this work in any industry or institution. There are some great things happening here. We don't elevate that. That stays too much in the background. The hood will get the limelight, but the teacher who is of the minority, of the majority culture, who is inclusive, respectful, doing all of those things, they're off in the background. And so it's happening. We just don't elevate it enough. Because I believe if we elevate it enough, others will get the courage. We keep talking about the fear, right? Others will become encouraged, and we can diminish the fear of stepping into that arena. Because it is happening, but it is unfortunate that we spend so much time elevating where it's not happening. And it does deserve our attention. But I think for others to really gravitate to it, or for us to attract others in the work, we have to talk about some wins. We have to talk about, as Nikki talked about, the implementation aspect of it and where it's actually working.
So do you think that that means that we need to provide maybe social media or other sort of aspects of ways where we can talk about good things that are happening in the school systems, or is there some solution that young people need to do? Because, I mean, they know the way.
Nothing singular, because one of the things I think is a bit flawed oftentimes, and especially when it comes to minorities and Black people. And I say this, we're not a monolith. There is not one single solution, right? And there are people all over this state approaching this work in different ways that I think can be effective. And not saying that, okay, well, they shouldn't do it that way. Well, it works for that community in that way through this particular vehicle. And we should be supportive of that, but understanding that it may work differently in a different place. And so there's not a one size fit all.
I think that's part of the challenge for some people, is they want an easy button.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you said earlier, just add water, right?
Yeah, just
and
add.
That's not a thing.
Right. Yeah, there's definitely, and is there a mental health aspect to all of this?
Oh, my goodness.
That's a big one.
So it's huge, it's huge. And I'll, again, speak from the Black perspective. And that is that every day as a Black woman, somebody chooses violence against me. Every day, whether it's a microaggression, whether it's a macroaggression, whether it is me having to watch another Black person being murdered on TV by whomever, these are acts of violence that are pushing themselves against our being. And to carry that around every day causes angst. It causes anxiety. The anxiety of a Black mother who has a Black son, the anxiety that she has when her Black son goes out into the world in his car, the anxiety about whether or not he's gonna make it home is a very real thing. The depression that comes from this idea that maybe this is all it is. Maybe we're never going to be equal. Maybe we're never going to be on the same playing field. It is daunting. It's a burden. And you know, people who are doing the work who are not minorities, God bless them. And they realize, the ones who are doing the work in real life, they realize we can't take this off. We can't take this off. So there's an entirely different level of mental health that needs to be monitored, that needs to be studied. Dr. Smith at the University of Utah termed a new term called racial fatigue. And racial fatigue is real for Black people. We are stuck in a place where we are judged immediately based on what we look like rather than who we are.
Do you know who that doctor's first name is?
Dr. William Smith.
So here's what's interesting about that. When we talk about our black men, my son, we were in a predominantly white community, and in high school, this was many years. This was before Trayvon Martin.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Living on the East Coast, it's cold. You wear your hoodie.
Yeah.
Well, his friends were white. Everyone would wear their hoodie. But I have a 6'4", almost 200-pound high schooler. You can't wear your hoodie. And he couldn't understand that. Mm. And so one evening after dinner, I told him, I said, let's go, and we call it the CVS store. Let's go around to the CVS. Make sure you have your wallet, your ID, and some money. And I want you to put your hoodie on, and I want you to walk in that store. I said, shop for something, find something. I said, but I want you to linger and I want you to stay a little while. I said, and I want you to pay attention to what begins to happen. I said, because someone's going to watch you, someone's going to follow you, and you may hear some things over the intercom that might not make sense to you, but it's their code.
Mm-hmm.
He came out crying.
Mm.
That was a hard lesson to teach a young man who's great guy, great student, concert pianist, all of that. Mm-hmm. But they didn't know that. They just saw the being. But as a mother, I had to teach him that to save his life.
That is heartbreaking.
And that is hard. And it is so unfair, but it's his reality. Well, he's 6'6 now, and he's over 200 pounds.
Yeah.
And he can't change that. There's nothing he can do about that. Mm-hmm. And to see his personality is to absorb it from a humorous standpoint. And it's heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
It's heartbreaking.
That is very heartbreaking. And I walked out of a movie earlier this year. I went with my wife to watch this movie. It was about the black guy who plays the violin back in the old days.
Chevalier.
I walked out of it. And the reason why, because at some point in there, it just sort of seemed like they were trying to paint this picture that all black men are just ready to just ravish every woman they can get their hands on, white, black, whatever. And I started to like tear up because I was like, every day when I walk into the gym, I walk into the store, I see somebody grab their wife and hold them a little closer when I walk by or do whatever. Cause it's like, I'm married. I'm not interested. It just, I can feel it. You know, this feeling of like, I'm a predator.
It's an assault.
Because of the fact that I'm just here.
Violence.
Anytime I'm near a police officer, whether I'm driving or we happen to be in the same, I don't even look at them. I don't even look at them because of the feeling that I have inside, the trauma. They might be like trying to make me feel welcome. I'm like, man, the more attention you give me, the more uncomfortable I feel.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's a double-edged sword. It is a double-edged sword. I tell a story similarly about myself. I have two very good girlfriends that are white, and we used to work in the same place. And one of our locations for the company was very far away, an hour away. And so when we used to work at that location, we would leave to come back to headquarters at the same time. And I would always arrive 15 minutes after they got to headquarters. And so we went to lunch one day, and they're like, why do you drive so slow? And so I had to explain to my two white girlfriends that I'm a black woman in Utah driving a BMW.
Oh.
And if a police officer gets behind me and pulls me over, I don't know how that interaction is going to end. I can't speed from down south to Salt Lake City like you can in your luxury vehicle.
Ooh-wee.
You have the complexion for protection. Mm. I do not. So I drive the speed limit. And it brought them to tears. But these are the stories, and these are the situations that need to be shared, because in order for people to understand DEI, there has to be empathy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
People have to be in your shoes and understand what it is like to live life in this body, whether it is a black body or a handicapped body or a body of a veteran, or we can keep going all day.
Yeah.
People need to understand what it is like to be unique, to be different, happened and what those experiences are. And if they don't know, it doesn't affect them. Mm-hmm. So we have to insist upon empathy from people in order for them to get fully in the game.
And it's hard because they feel like they're being attacked because, you know, you say insist, right? Which seems like a very harsh word. And it's like, well, you, there's no way to just, you've had the opportunity your whole life. You know what I mean? To be empathetic, to get to know somebody, to see what it's like to walk in their shoes, to live in their skin. And all that is about spending time together, sharing each
proximity.
Proximity, conversations. Yes. Your girlfriends probably felt closer to you by understanding that than they had over months of lunches together and everything.
Absolutely.
That one conversation made them understand and love you deeper than they probably had.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And recognize your humanity, because it's so important, because a lot of people don't realize when you may be a part of a majority and you're in a room and there's one person who's different, doesn't matter if they're Black, doesn't matter if they're LGBT, if you are not recognizing that person is different and may have a different thought than you do, and you start spouting off of the mouth about different things and that person feels uncomfortable, they may not come out and tell you that. Mm-hmm. Right. They may not come out and say, look, I feel uncomfortable right now, because they don't want to rock the boat.
And not everybody has the courage when you're the only one in the room to speak up.
Yep.
You know what I mean? That doesn't feel like a safe place already, because you're already alone.
Mm-hmm.
So
and there could be a power dynamic whether or not speaking up
but
and
recognizing
that. But
relationships are what changes those dynamics.
Talk about it.
Because we have to be in proximity to be able to empathize. I don't know you if you're just on the other side of the room. That's why so much of the work with the chamber is predicated on community and inclusivity of bringing all those different cultures together. Because now I get to be in proximity. I get to hear. I get to engage. I get to understand. Now I can empathize. But as long as you're over there and I am either guessing or being informed by outside sources that still don't know me, it keeps us divided, right? And so being in proximity and having those conversations, we can go on and on about relationships and business that has happened right here in Utah, because people were in proximity with each other. You talked about the aspect of mental health, right? We have this thing that we talk about. I always go back to we. Illness starts with I. Wellness starts with we.
I like that.
We have to do it together. We're here anyway, right? We're here. We are really not separate. We are here. And so how do we, with intention, get closer to listen, to hear, to understand? Because we can all call folks that we're in relationship with, no matter what they look like. It's hard when there's the absence of that, but that takes work.
You have to get out of your comfort zone.
That takes work.
Yeah.
So what would be one thing you would want our audience to take away from this? What would you say, Nikki?
I think the one thing that I want people to take away from this is actually two things. So empathy and action. I think that if we want to be in a space where DEI is once again celebrated as opposed to being questioned, I think we need an empathetic base. So get to know your neighbor. Get to know somebody that you have never met. I tell people when I speak all the time, if you are sitting next to someone you know, get up and move. You need to move because you need to experience someone else, right? So that relationship can be built and empathy can be had based on it. And then action. Again, we talked about it earlier on the show. We've been taught what DEI is supposed to look like. We've been shown all of the tools. I mean, there are so many. I get hit up from salespeople every day who have a new DEI tool to use, to measure, to activate. Activate on something, whether it is an ERG or a cultural celebration. activate on something, get the momentum behind you, and lead with empathy.
I love it.
Dr. Shorter.
So I go back to this, because I always go back to economics, right?
Mm-hmm.
Make an investment in someone that you don't know or that doesn't look like you. And that investment is your time, your intentionality, and being deliberate about developing a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are the things that yield dividends.
Mm.
Those relationships will yield dividends that go beyond us and become generational. And that's what I believe we should become intentional about.
So 1 minute left. How do we change the culture of DEI?
I think for me, I believe in modeling what you advocate for.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I'm very proud of about the Utah Black Chamber of Commerce is that we are very inclusive. And when you raise the hood and look into the chamber, we are very diverse. But we model inclusion. And so we've been asked, well, why do you call it Black? Well, we have to consider where we're located. We have to understand the demographics. And so there has to be some type of signage to say, we're here for you, but we're also here for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is about economics. And most often, we don't want to have that conversation, but I'm a chamber of commerce, right? I have to be concerned about the economics. And so when we talk about DEI in this context, it's still about economics.
Yeah.
And so we just want to make certain that everyone is included and a part of that. And that is the action of the work. Got to stop talking about it. We've got to put the action behind it.
Thank you.
We actually have about 60 seconds, so I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are on that.
How do we change it? How do we get DEI back on track?
Yeah.
To Sydney's point, it's about the doing at this point. We have been taught and told what it's supposed to look like, how it can be activated, how people can be actionable about it. And right now it's just a time to be actionable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really agree with that, especially being steeped in the midst of the work.
Yeah.
The people who are doing are seeing results, mm-hmm. and that's what matters.
Thank you so much.
That's such a perfect way to wrap up.
That is. This has been a really wonderful conversation. And it's really nice to hear. It's nice to hear some of those personal stories that you guys have experienced, because I think that's where people can start to see our common humanity and start to create that empathy and want to have those relationships, because we all want to be loved, man. It's a universal desire.
Mm-hmm.
And so we thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing.
Human beings, not human doings.
That's
yep.
right. That's right.
Thank you, ladies. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
All right.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Roots, Race, and Culture.
Check out our website for more content, information about our guests, and other episodes. You can find all that in a bag of chips at pbsutah.org/roots.
And you'd be doing us a solid if you told all your friends about our show. But until next time, y'all, we are out.